किम उव्यवहितापथ्या दरागराधनारयः रज्यकोश गजामाथ्या वृत्त्यप्ता मम तस्परः किम एतर आत्मनस्तुच्यै साह देहन नश्वरैः अंतर अर्था संकशायर नित्यानंद रसोदथे. Since the body itself is ultimately meant to become stool or earth, what is the meaning of the paraphernalia related to the body, such as wives, residences, wealth, children, relatives, servants, friends, kingdoms, treasuries, animals, and ministers? They are also temporary. What more can be said about this? All this paraphernalia is very near and dear as long as the body exists. But as soon as the body is destroyed, all things related to the body are also finished. Therefore, actually, one has nothing to do with them. But because of ignorance, one accepts them as valuable. Compared to the ocean of eternal happiness, they are most insignificant. What is the use of such insignificant relationships for the eternal living being? What we have in this chapter, you may say it's a very unusual thing. You have a 5-6-year-old boy preaching to his school friends. It's not a very common thing you will find today. What the 5-6-year-old kids talk about? They don't talk about Atma Tattva. They don't talk about God. They don't talk about Krishna consciousness. They talk about different things. So it's a very interesting example how Krishna consciousness or spiritual life is not limited by any social conventions, by any age or any other considerations. Krishna consciousness is for everybody and everybody can practice spiritual life. While I was preparing for this class, I read the whole chapter, and it's a very many good points can be found there. Like what I found interesting is this point, like Krishna consciousness or spiritual life is not limited to the age, to the social conventions. Even before the birth, one can become Krishna conscious, like Prahlad became Krishna conscious while hearing instructions of Narada Muni. So you can say spiritual life is really something that transcends any material constraints. It's possible. And you can see in this verse that actually if you read the whole chapter, you can see that that Prahlad Maharaj is very systematic how he approaches the subject. First, he preaches to his schoolmates that the basic principle of spiritual life, which is Prabhupada often emphasized this, what is the basic principle of spiritual life, that the starting point of everything that one has to realize. You are not the body. He explains this. You are not the body. You are something else. You are spirit soul. And then he explains that if you're not this body, then everything that relates to this body, you see it in a different from a different point of view. You see it in a different perspective. And then he explains that material happiness is actually not the goal of life. You should aspire for something else. And then he also explains that for what you should aspire. You should aspire for loving devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he explains the process by chanting. He explains the condition. He explains the goal. And he explains the process. So you can find Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So in these verses, you can see that sometimes Srimad Bhagavatam is very harsh. I mean, has like very examples that may be a little bit, like he says, what is the use of all these material possessions that you have? Wife and children, and he has gaja and animals. So this would be like cars and, I don't know, trucks or today. So what's the use of all of this? You may, when you read this, may seem, wow, this is really kind of heavy hitting. But you have to remember where from the Bhagavatam is coming from. In the second verse, it is explained that dharma projito kaitava, that Srimad Bhagavatam comes from the highest level of transcendence and rejects all other lesser goals. Like in, usually in, what does it mean to be religious? what's moral or ethical life? What do you do? First, you practice some dharma. Dharma means you follow certain rules and regulations. And then, because of that, you live a good life. You get some things, you get artha. And because you have things, you have like a MacBook Pro, you have iPad, you have a nice car, then there's some karma, then in some sense enjoyment. And then when you get enough, then you aspire for liberation. This is normal ethical or moral life. But Bhagavatam doesn't actually address none of this. He starts from the fifth platform, which is called prema. He addresses prema. These are all irrelevant. You should not actually aspire for all this. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj is speaking here. He's speaking that one actually has nothing to do with them, but because of ignorance, one accepts them as valuable. And what he speaks here is particularly about relations that we have with people in this world, like wife and children. And I find it interesting how, I think it needs to be clarified here, and Prabhupada clarifies it in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where in the 13th chapter, if you remember, verses from 8 to 12, there describes different items of knowledge. What's the first item of knowledge? Somebody remembers. Amanityam, humility. And then one of the other items is not to be attached to wife and children. But this does not mean that one is cold towards them. So Prabhupada clarified, what does it mean? Because often you have this dilemma. You understand the highest goal, but you have to understand your position, where you find yourself, what's your conditioned nature. It's not proper just to kind of abandon everything. That's not the goal. So Prabhupada clarifies, what does it mean not to be attached? Let me just find a... He writes, as for the detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection, but when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is fully Krishna conscious, he can make his home very happy, because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. So it's not, you cannot escape affection, but you should understand from an ultimate point of view, if they are obstacle, if, in other words, I looked into the commentaries, what the acharyas say, what does it mean that the family can be an obstacle? It means if you identify with the family, if your sense of identity comes from your relations in this world, then it's an obstacle for spiritual life. If your main sense of identity is, I have this social position in this world, I'm husband of such and such, I'm wife of such and such, then it's an obstacle. Because spiritual life means to actually to become awake about reality. And there's a nice story I recently found out about this. I was reading a book by one author, and he uses a lot of stories to illustrate his points, and about this being aware, or being awake, being this, living as a spiritual, understanding who you are. He gives an example of a father and a son, and it's one morning, and the son has to go to the school, and then the father would call, I don't know, David, come, it's school time. Oh, I don't want to go. He said, why? Like, three reasons. It's dull, children tease me, and I don't like it. And then the father said, I'll give you three reasons why you have to go. First, it's your duty. Second, you're 45 years old. And the third, you're the principal. Yeah, he was the principal. So, you know, that's the condition, you know. People just don't want to wake up. So, spiritual life means to be awake, who you are as a person. And sometimes when you read all of this, it may sound very, very harsh. These are heavy, what is... And Prahlad Maharaj is giving you the juice, really, like heavy. And for the children, I felt, my gosh, how they're listening all this. But that's the reality. That's the reality of our existence. That's who we are. And spiritual life means to be aware. But also understanding, okay, where do I stand in relation to this highest goal? We have this... And what is Prahlad Maharaj preaching here is detachment. Here. But there's a danger here. From a spiritual perspective, one should see the faults of this world. One should focus on the faults of this world. One should see that actually there's no happiness in this world. But if one focuses only on this, then the heart becomes very hard. Like there is in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Krishna is preaching to Uddhava that if one is too much disgusted with this world, one actually cannot practice bhakti. It's just too much disgust. It's not possible for one. Why? If there is too much disgust, why? Because if it's too much disgust, then one is unable to see that actually everything belongs to Krishna and can be used in his service. A family can also become Krishna conscious. If it's too much disgust, then you reject everything, you just go to the forest. But this is not what makes heart very happy. It cannot make on a long term. So too much detachment is no good. Because the heart becomes very hard. Then on the other hand, you have another extreme, the person who is very attached. Then that such person should practice karma. Like purifying his or her attachments. But a bhakti, a proper qualification for bhakti is na nirvino na tisakto. One who is neither too detached and one who is neither too attached. So that's the qualification for bhakti. Because too much detachment is no good. Because it makes the heart very hard. And heart for bhakti needs to be soft. Also what we find in this verse is that Prahlad Maharaj speaks about the eternal happiness that comes from being spirit soul. And being engaged in process of devotional service. And you have, for example, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when Rupa Goswami describes the six qualities of bhakti, he describes that bhakti makes the happiness of liberation very small or insignificant, moksha laguta krit. And then he describes what's the quality of Bhava Bhakti. Bhava Bhakti is Chandrananda Visheshatma. Means that Bhava Bhakti means that it's a condensed bliss. And you feel, and also in Bhagavad Gita, how does Krishna describe in the chapter 9, how does Krishna describe the process of devotional service in the beginning? It says, Susukam Kartum Avyayam. It is joyfully performed. And you feel that if you don't feel this happiness, or if you don't feel this bliss, that means that we are doing something wrong in spiritual life. Because Prabhupada said that chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So these are two things. And it naturally comes as a process of spiritual understanding. So if this doesn't come, that means there is something wrong in our practice. For whatever reason. Because to understand who you are, can you just imagine that let's say this story from the Bible, from lost son, and a father had two sons. One son went away, one son stayed with the father, and then one son that left lost everything and came back. And then when he came back, the father prepared a huge feast for that son. And it was, can you imagine, just as a spirit soul, after so many years and lives in wilderness with no real pleasure in this world, you come to a source, you drink, and then you are not happy. That means, what's going on? So that's the process of spiritual life, that you access this happiness, you access this joy, which is real. Because that's the nature of the soul, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. The joy, the soul is fully joyful, full of happiness. Another important thing that to understand, like I said, that often we hear about these things, and then, I remember when I started with practicing devotional life, when I got into Krishna consciousness, I was reading about these early days, how people would come to Prabhupada, and in 1-2 years they would become sannyasis, they would renounce, they would just become big devotees all of a sudden. And I felt, yeah, I can do that. Like in 2-3 years, I'll be a sannyasi, or I'll do that. You just have this kind of enthusiasm that you will conquer the world. Yeah, it's possible, but you have to understand what's your position and pace yourself. Another example that I found very instructive comes from the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, when Dhruva Maharaj went to the forest. Well, actually, before he went, he was very disappointed. We all know the story of Dhruva Maharaj. And then Narada Muni comes to him and says to him, you know, Dhruva, you should just tolerate this. This is an insignificant thing. You should just tolerate this. And then Dhruva Maharaj says this to Narada Muni. Man, Narada Muni is a guru and Dhruva Maharaj is a disciple. Not at this point, but that's the kind of the norm there. And then Dhruva Maharaj says, that's a very nice instruction, you know, but it's not for me. I cannot follow it. It's just too high. I'm not on this level. It's not for me. It's not relevant for me. This is an instruction for a brahminical person. I'm a kshatriya. You know, I need to get my revenge. I need to kind of fulfill my vrata. I need to do it because, you know, that's my nature. And then he, in other words, he was honest enough to say to his spiritual master, you know, that's not for me. It's a very good instruction, but it's not for me. And then another thing is also very interesting what he says, that then he says, please give me instruction that I can follow, which is relevant for me. And then Narada Muni gave him the sadhana. Okay, go if you want to, okay, you want to fulfill that, your desire, what you have. You go to the Madhavan in Vrindavan, chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then the God will come and fulfill your desire. I said, great, yeah, that's for me. So you see this, he found the path that, he found the position that was appropriate for him. So when you read all these verses, you're young and very enthusiastic human. Yeah, I don't need to get married. What's the point of all this? And I'll just renounce the world. But really? You have to understand what's your position. You have to, if you want to travel somewhere, I don't know, wherever, you put the destination on Google Maps. You have to know a destination, like Krishna Loka. That's our destination. That's where we are going. But the second thing you need to put, what's the second thing you need to put? Where you are. So as a spiritual practitioner, each one of us has to understand where he or she is. And based on this, one situates itself as a brahmachari, as a grihastha, as a vanaprastha, and a sannyasi. That's, you know, that's a subjective thing, that one has to be honest enough to understand where he or she is. And in the past, in our society, we had many problems because many people felt that they were here and actually they were there. It's much better to accept who you are and then gradually work yourself towards there. It won't help you if you pretend. It won't help nobody. You may keep this for a while, but on a long term, this is not actually very advisable. So that's a very important thing. What's your dharma? What's your svadharma in relation to paradharma, to the ultimate goal, to the supreme destination? Because when you read these verses, I read the whole chapter, and these are like really atma tattva, and they speak, they propagate renunciation, they propagate detachment from everything material, but from one point of view, this is not our process in a way. One should, because like I said, that we should not, in the beginning, one detaches itself from the things that he or she did before. Like you stop with certain things. We all know what things you stop. And then the main thing, what we actually do, it's you practice bhakti, you practice devotion. And by practicing bhakti, you acquire taste for something higher. And then these things gradually just fall away. All the unwanted. If you practice bhakti properly, then things gradually fall away because you develop the higher taste. Like, if you have been eating bread your whole life, and then somebody comes and offers you a cake, and then the next day this person comes, oh, I have this tasty bread, it's excellent. Yeah, it's okay, but now I have bread, now I have something better. So you have this higher taste from bhakti, and then bhakti, from devotion to God, you actually, from this natural detachment towards the world develops. Yeah, so these are the kind of the main points that I wanted to emphasize today, that one needs to understand his or her position, where he or she is. One needs to also understand what's the ultimate goal, and one also needs to understand what's the process. These are very, very important things, and it can save you personally a lot of trouble in spiritual life if you really understand what's your position and then you practice accordingly. And you also need to be aware what's the goal. This needs to be very, very clear. And this comes from practice, and this understanding mainly comes through listening. And therefore it's very good to remind ourselves about these things by reading and hearing Bhagavatam constantly. Like, for example, I was preparing for this class, and then I read this verse, if you remember before, that what does Prabhupada Maharaj says about happiness in this world? He says, in this material world, every materialist desires to achieve happiness and diminish his distress, and therefore he acts accordingly. Actually, however, one is happy as long as one does and not endeavor for happiness. These are such sobering verses, especially if you don't read the Bhagavatam every day. If I don't read the Bhagavatam every day, I used to do, but not maybe every day. So when you read this, and then you see your position, and you're struggling in this world, you're frustrated with this or that, then you read, it's sobering. As soon as one begins his activities for happiness, his condition of distress begins. Because this material world is always a duality thing. You cannot have happiness without distress. You cannot have heat without cold. To experience one, you have to experience the other. And perhaps my favorite verse from the Bhagavad Gita, it's 5:22, where it is mentioned, and this is a kind of a sutra for us. We should always approach life in this mood, I feel. Yes, yehi sansparsha jabogaya. Sansparsha means the touch of the senses with the object of the senses. Dukkha yonaya evate. Only brings about suffering. Why? Because such pleasure is adi antavantaha kaunteya. Has the beginning and has the end. Whatever it's pleasurable now, it will end. And we cannot have it. Simply, it's not possible. Nateshu ramate buddhaya. And those who are really intelligent, buddhaya, they don't seek pleasure in these kind of things. So always, when you have something pleasurable, when you find yourself in a comfortable position, you have to understand it will end. You have a nice car, you have a nice elephant, what is this used example here, nice gajan, good car, nice house, but it will end. It won't last. And also you can take it from another point of view. If you find yourself in a miserable position, don't worry, relax, it will also end. And Prabhupada says in the previous purports, it's in this world, it's impossible to be absolute 100% happy and 100% unhappy. It's just impossible. It's not possible to be 100% miserable. So it will end. It's just the material duality, happiness and distress. And one should understand that our actual happiness, our actual joy doesn't lie in this world. We need to wake up. We need to go to school because, yes, we are 45 and that's our duty. That's who we are. Hare Krishna. If there are some questions or comments...